All right, welcome back to the Dan Time Podcast. I'm your host, Dan McArdle. I appreciate you subscribing and leaving a star rating for the show. Well, you knew the Mystic Dan story had to continue, and here we are with the jockey who rode the three-year-old Bay Colt to victory at this year's Kentucky Derby, Brian Hernandez Jr. Not only did he win the Run for the Roses with Mystic Dan, but Brian also rode Bay Filly Torpedo Anna to victory in the Kentucky Oaks at Churchill Downs the day before, which made him just the eighth jockey in history to win both races back-to-back and the first in 15 years. Brian's hometown of Shelbyville, Kentucky, declared May 20th Brian Hernandez Jr. Day. The Sporting News wrote, Hernandez spearheaded Mystic Dan's ascent to the upper echelons of racing lore. Brian comes from a family of jockeys, and we get into that and more in this conversation. Brian's career spans over two decades and more than 2,500 victories. In 2004, he won 243 races and was given the prestigious Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice Jockey. Thoroughbred Daily News wrote about Brian, he never quit, never stopped working, and never lost the desire to be one of the leading riders in the sport. Brian and his younger brother, Colby, grew up watching their dad, Brian Sr., race at Delta Downs and Evangeline Downs. He knew from a very young age that he wanted to follow in his father's footsteps and create a legacy of his own. At Saratoga Racecourse this Saturday, July 20th, Brian rides Torpedo Anna in the G1 Coaching Club American Oaks. Thoroughbred Daily News referred to Anna as, quote, the most popular thoroughbred on the grounds, and she's won all three of her starts in 2024. Brian and I spoke just prior to opening weekend at Saratoga. I think you're going to love this conversation. We talk about Mystic Dan, Torpedo Anna, Rattle and Roll, and other horses from milestone victories in Brian's career, plus his relationship with trainer Kenny McPeak, and a whole lot more. So let's get to it now. Folks, it is Brian Hernandez Jr. time. Brian, how's it going today?
Oh, good, Dan. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's great to have you. I so enjoyed catching up with Lance and feeling the excitement that he still has in the team and Kenny, and that the Kentucky Derby brought to the entire team there. I know you're in Saratoga, and we're going to catch up on the here and now, but are you still on cloud nine? Are you kind of back to business now? It's been a couple months, but just the experience of a lifetime. How is it now, 2 months later?
Yeah, it's still kind of surreal, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, you participate in horse racing your whole life, and you try to get to these moments, and to finally win a race like the Kentucky Derby, it's a special moment. You know, I'm up here in Saratoga now, and it was funny. I was out on the backside this morning with some owners, and they asked if it was hard to walk around town now being a Derby winner. I was like, no, I normally just kind of keep to myself and don't say a whole lot. So it's just, you know, recognition like that, to know that we're only one of 150 Kentucky Derby winners. It's definitely a moment to be proud of.
And you actually go down in history with another designation with back-to-back, I mean, basically a night's sleep between the Oaks and the Derby run. Tell me about that, just that whirlwind.
Yeah, that's another whirlwind. You know, we went into the Kentucky Oaks on Friday knowing that we had a big, big chance, and our filly was doing really, really good. And she jumped up and showed how dominant she was on Friday. So then turn around, and less than 24 hours later, we have the Kentucky Derby to look at. And I know myself and Kenny and Lance and all those guys, we went into that race kind of quietly confident that we knew we had the right horse for the Derby. We just needed to give him the good trip and just not give him any excuses. And then from that point we knew we can trust him, and for him to jump up, and it was just kind of one of those meant to be moments, I believe, because for a race like the Kentucky Derby, for everything to go just perfectly like it did, and have our nose down in front at the wire, it was just one of those deals. Like I said, I think it was just meant to be.
And I was reading an AP article here where you talked about prior to the Derby, you studied Hall of Famer Calvin Burrell and his approach, I guess, in the 2010 Derby run with Super Saver.
Yeah, when we the week before when they did the draw, and Mystic Dan drew to three posts, Kenny and I had discussed it all along that we needed to save all the ground possible and just try to get through up the inside. So I went back and I watched, Calvin over the years. He won three Kentucky Derbies, and he's so memorable for the rides he put on those horses. A horse like, he made the difference to Mind That Bird, and then the next year he comes back with Super Saver and put the ride on Super Saver like he did. He knew he came out the three hole that day as well. Or you know what, he might have been the four hole, and he knew that he needed to get to the rail as soon as possible, and he did that, and he was able to just go around one horse. So I knew with the horse I had under me with Mystic Dan that if I can give him that kind of trip and ride him with that much confidence, that I thought he can get the job done with just getting the jump on the closers. And it's another testament to Mystic Dan too. He's the type of horse that I was able to make that kind of run with, because he's a rare kind of horse where he's almost got a gas pedal to him. When you push the gas, he takes off, and when you need to slow down, you just tap the brakes a little, and it's like driving a car with him. And that helps with a race like the Derby, because there's so much going on. You need a horse that's going to listen to you and handle situations as well as he did.
I love when Lance spoke to me about Mystic Dan's demeanor. Yeah, I think he said he's kind of an old soul. He doesn't get too hyper. He's very calm and collected. I'm sure that's what you've observed as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things that makes him a Kentucky Derby winner as well, just his mindset of being able to understand all the tasks we've asked him to do, and for him to be so willing to do it, it's been a lot of fun to be a part of him.
Now, a lot of people, watch the Derby, and me included. I don't follow the sport all year. Actually, I think some things are going to change now. I'm really getting excited about the sport, as I'm sure every year, more and more people get into thoroughbred racing. But a lot goes on in the shadows over the course of your career, which spans over 20 years. And if I'm reading this correctly, because a lot of early mornings, late nights. And if you go all the way back to your days in high school, you would get up before school and exercise the horses. And take me back to that time period, 2003. I think you were your first race or first meet was when you were still in high school.
Yeah, back when I started galloping horses and riding on small unrecognized racetracks back when I was like 13 years old. So I always kind of thought I'd be a jockey, and the only thing my parents told me was that I had to make sure I finished high school. I can ride, but I needed to finish high school. So my senior year of high school, I was 17, 18 years old, and my mom and dad let me start riding. I think it was like December, the first part of December of 2003. But I was going to high school in Lafayette, Louisiana, which is it's about 2 hours east of Delta Downs, where the racing in Louisiana was going on at the time. So my dad and I, we'd gallop horses in the mornings over at the farm close to Lafayette, and then I'd go to school from like 11 till 2:30 in the afternoons, and he'd pick me up from school, and then we'd make the 2 hour drive over to Delta and ride all night long, and then the races at Delta would get over at about 10:30, 11 at night, and we jump in the car and drive home and get a couple hours of sleep and do it all over again. And I did that for about 7 months, and then right the day after I graduated high school, my dad loaded me up. Him and I loaded up in a. I moved there to Louisville, Kentucky, and started riding Churchill.
Wow, I love it. And so your father is a jockey, your younger brother Colby, and your sister Courtney. And I understand Colby is still active.
Yeah, my dad rode for about 20, 25 years, and then little sister rode for a little while, and then she started a family. She's got three kids and husband now. And Kobe's actually doing well. He's here in Kentucky riding Churchill and Ellis Park right now. He's won over 2,400 races, and he's had a nice little career for himself.
Well, like I said, going back to those days, you probably not a lot of time for girlfriends or just messing around. You probably were just locked in, and you knew. I guess I remember watching the Derby, and folks, if you missed this, you can find it on YouTube. Just a wonderful moment, the interview where you said, "When I was 6 years old, I told my grandparents I'm gonna race in the Derby or win in the Derby, one of those two things." And what a young age to just know, I guess, because you're exposed to it, but that never.
Yeah, with growing up at the racetrack like I did, Kobe and I, when we were really young kids, we used to take all my dad's old jock equipment and put on the pants and the silks and everything else, and take off on the ponies out in the field and race them up and down the field. And then there was a picture floating around of myself. I was about 6 years old, and it says, and I walked in and told my grandparents, "One day I'm going to win the Kentucky Derby." And I mean, as a young kid, you always have dreams of doing that, and then for it to come to fruition like it did, it's pretty magical.
Wow. So much to dive into here. One thing that's fun, because this show is really just meant to be a fun conversations. So some of my listeners follow the sport, and some of them hopefully are going to be getting into the sport. But Brian, I've
Yeah,
always just.
we need all the support in racing we can get, all the new fans we can get. It's always a lot of fun.
There in Saratoga, yesterday is basically the opening day for the, it's a 40-day meet. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
You,
Yeah.
with all the history there, this is one of the oldest, I think it's one of the oldest sporting facilities in the country, going back to the mid late 1800s.
Yeah, it is. Saratoga is a magical place, especially if you like horse racing or have any interest in horse racing whatsoever. You should always try to get a chance to come up here to Saratoga, because it's just a little small town, and you get about 60,000 people that come in here for the 8 weeks of the meet, and it's all about horse racing. You walk up and down Broadway here downtown, and everybody's here talking about the racing. And you go out close to the racetrack there, and you'll be driving down Nelson Avenue, and all of a sudden here comes a flock of horses from a barn out in somebody's backfield, somebody's back pasture, that they're going to the racetrack to train. It's kind of a throwback in time. If you want to go back to like the early 30s, as close as you can get, this is Saratoga is the place to come.
I feel like in today's world, I talk about this on some of my episodes, things feel pretty busy. Things sometimes feel pretty tense. And I think there's a longing for recreational activities where you could just go and maybe reconnect with your past. Go and you probably see different generations.
It's a big family picnic, most of all. I mean, like this morning, I was driving at a racetrack at 6:30, and there's people lined up because they open the gates up at 7 for people to get their picnic tables. So 6:30 this morning, people were lined up all the way down the street waiting to go get their picnic tables, and then they let them get their picnic tables, and then they have to get out, and then the gates reopen at 11 for the races to start at 1. So it's a everybody brings in their coolers, and they just make a big picnic of it. It's a fun experience, to say the least, that's for sure. And then to imagine we're all there are all these people are here for racing, it's fun to see, that's for sure.
Well, Brian, we've gone a little far in the episode without me mentioning Torpedo Anna. Tell me about your relationship with this horse. Well, I've got notes scattered around here. She is a Mystic's a bay colt, and Anna is a.
She's a bay filly. No, she's just a rare racehorse, I guess is the best way to put it. I was fortunate enough early in my career to ride another really good filly before she turned great, was Rachel Alexander. So, I mean, I've heard people put Torpedo Anna in the same category as her, and right now it kind of seems like she's on that path. She goes out there, she does everything we want to ask of her, and she's just been so dominant in everything she does. For her to go out in the Kentucky Oaks and set the fast fractions that she did on a sloppy racetrack, and just still dominate over the field like she did, it's she's an exciting filly to be a part of, and it's been a fun ride so far.
And then following the Oaks blowout back on June 8th, the Acorn Stakes.
Yeah, she came up to, we had the Acorn Stakes up here at Saratoga this year, which is normally run down at Belmont for Belmont Day, but they moved all the Belmont Day races that weekend up to Saratoga because they're redoing Belmont down in downstate New York. So she came up here for the Acorn, and I mean, she was just, I think she was kind of the talk of the weekend. Everybody walked away from Belmont weekend, even though we had a Belmont winner. Everybody kind of walked out of there talking about Torpedo Anna and her dominance in the Acorn. And she's gonna run back next Saturday in the coaching club American Oaks up here at Saratoga. So we're excited about it. I'm gonna breeze her tomorrow morning, and it'll be her last major breeze before her race next Saturday.
Now, people maybe assume that there is a mix of male and female. Talk a little bit about that, where you have a female colt going up there, and how they're able to compete, how they're not.
Yeah, she hasn't raced against the boys yet. Kenny's kind of talking about maybe trying it later on in the year, but as of right now, he's left her against just the girls, and she's dominated on them pretty well. And you know, that's been kind of the beauty of it. We have a really good filly in her, and then we have the Kentucky Derby winner in Mystic Dan. So you know, he wants to keep them in straight 3-year-old races, and he doesn't want to race them against each other. So it looks like he's gonna just keep her against the girls for now, and then Mystic Dan will face the boys here up here in Saratoga later in the summer.
And Brian, your relationship with Kenny McPeak, this goes back quite a long time as well, right?
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. You know, it's rare nowadays in horse racing for a jockey and a trainer to kind of stick together and work as well as we have over the years. But we kind of learned early on that we've got a really good working relationship, and I've been fortunate. Kenny's put me on some really, really good horses, and it's just been a lot of fun. You know, anytime he needs me there to show up to ride or work horses in the morning or ride in the afternoons, like this weekend, he asked me to come up to Saratoga, and I'm here for 4 days just to majority ride for him and just to keep him happy. And it's been a fun experience, because you know, it makes my job a lot easier knowing that I can go out there every day and not have to worry about getting fired and looking for another job, trying to find new horses to ride. It's been an enjoyable 8 years, that's for sure.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because maybe some people don't think about the relationships between trainers and jockeys, and I can imagine sometimes there's some not so harmonious relationships, or it's just not, it doesn't
yeah,
it's always just fit like a glove.
It's a fine line too, because you know, in the same aspect, those trainers, they have owners to answer to. You know, it's not just their money that they're looking after. So if you have the guy in the back of your ear telling you, hey, the guy that's paying the bills telling you in the back of your ear, in the trainer's case, hey, that jockey, I don't want to ride him anymore. You almost have to listen to that owner, or you're going to both be looking for a job. The jockey and the trainer will be looking for a job. So you got to find the fine balance in it. That's been the one great thing about working for Kenny. And it's just been, there's been a good balance. And his owners, you know, when you get to ride for, owners like the Gazaways and all these guys, it makes everything so much more fun and so much more enjoyable, because everybody kind of gets along and respects one another, and everybody understands that we're here for the betterment of the horse.
Brian, I want to get into maybe not really some silly season here, but everybody loves the names of these horses, and people have their favorites. I'm sure you have some favorites. I'm just going to mention some names. There's, you know, Rattle and Roll, the Chestnut Colt. Are you still riding?
Yes, he's just coming back from a little bit of a layoff. He needed some time. He had a tough campaign last year, so he got a break over the winter, and he's back over there at Churchill, and he'll be ready to rattle and roll pretty soon.
Going back to your 1,000th win on Wild and Crazy Guy, that's just a almost perfect name.
Yeah. I don't really remember much about him. I know that was our 1,000th win, but that was like the only time I'd ever ridden that horse.
And then number 2000, a Fleet Roger. Do you now, are there some of these horses that they're now stud horses? Do you ever see them years later?
Yeah, every once in a while. I won the Breeders' Cup Classic years ago on a horse called Fort Larned. And when he first went off to stud, he was standing there in Lexington. So we went out and we seen him a couple times. And there's been a few of them that you go and see. But then there's some, you know, the years go by after a while, and there's some that you just kind of, they move on with their career and you move on with yours. So it's kind of a working relationship, I guess. You know, you like to have some sentiment for them and you enjoy them, but it's just each year you got new ones coming in at the same time.
Let's go back just to the Triple Crown races, and we won't get into all of them, but just something like the Kentucky Derby. How are your nerves when it's an hour prior, 30 minutes prior, 5 minutes? Are you kind of mirroring Mystic Dan? Are you pretty calm? I know sometimes I was reading that the post position 17 has never produced a winner. So I'm sure that the goal is to not draw 17.
I drew 17 one year on a really good horse we thought had a major chance. And his second jump out the gate, he got completely wiped out and he lost all chance from there. But no, it just kind of, with those races, it just kind of goes by race, you know. Going into the Derby this year, for some reason, we were so confident in Mystic Dan that there was just like this calming effect over it. I know myself and I think everyone else, you know, it was just like, I know I went into the race just saying, well, I have the right horse. All I have to do is just not give him a bad trip and not get in his way. So once we got in the post parade and I kind of seen how Mystic Dan was taking in the 120,000 people there, and he never turned a hair. So it made my confidence a whole lot greater. And then we just went out there and, you know, we just kind of gave him the trip that we needed to, and he was there for me the whole way around there. And like I said, it, you know, sometimes you go into those big races knowing that the horse isn't doing as well as you'd like him to be. So you're a little nervous about what's going to happen. But in this year's Derby, we knew going into it, we had the right horse, and all we had to do was just not mess it up. And we knew he'd be there for me. So it was definitely a lot of fun, a lot of joy.
And you have relationships, I'm sure, with other jockeys. Days like that, is there any interaction with the jockeys who finished well behind? You know, they're finishing 18th, 19th, 20th. Are they coming up and congratulating you? Or are you saying, hey, tough day, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, for the most part, you know, we in the jocks room like that, we're around these guys just as much as we are our own families. You know, we spend 5 days a week in there, 7 hours a day. So you have to have the mutual respect for each other. And you know, everywhere I've gone since we've won the Derby, everybody's come up and congratulated us and just told us what a great job it was. And everyone's been pretty happy. You know, you always want to win, but at the same time, in our sport, if you're winning at 18 to 20%, you're doing really, really well. So that means 80% of the time you're going to lose. So you just have to learn. If you don't learn to lose well, you're not going to learn. You're not going to be around in this sport very long.
Wow, what a great application to anything that you might be competing in. And I'm sure there were a number of years there where it's, like I said, we go back to 2003, your first career win at Delta Downs, your first stakes win, Lanyap at Delta Downs on Our Here Tis.
Looking at
some of these names.
It was like my 10th or 11th winner of my career was that gray filly there at Delta.
But a lot of personal growth. You begin a family. There's other things going on in your life. And is there ever anything outside of racing that complicates matters, or how has it been over the years, just being locked in and dedicated to your craft?
No, I've been very fortunate. You know, I got lucky. I got lucky. My wife and I started dating about 15 years ago, 16 years ago, and she's from a racing family as well, and she understands the whole traveling and the moving and the bouncing around stuff, and she understands my job, and I understand hers as well. So it's made it great. We were both pretty young when we started dating. We were 23, I believe. And she's made my life a lot easier, just understanding that when I'm traveling and moving around and bouncing all over the country and she's got the kids at the farm, she's not worried about my job because she knows I'll be able to go out there and perform and just, and I know in the back of my mind that I don't have to worry about what's going on at home because she's back home and she's making sure everything's well and the kids are in good shape. So it's been a lot of joy and it's made, like I said, it's made my life a lot easier just having her behind me.
I was fortunate, as I'm sure you are. I feel like my wife, she decided to keep me. It's kind of like when you
Yeah.
bring a dog home or something, or like, well,
Exactly.
I guess she's going to keep me. So,
Yep. That's what I tell her if she ever decides to leave, let me know where she's going. I'm coming too.
speaking of family, I love some of these photos. I love, I encourage everybody to follow you on social media, but there's a great photo. Couple of them actually. The one with your daughter and the ring pop.
Yeah, she's her name's Annabelle. She's 4 years old, and she was out at the races, and I think we had won a stake earlier in the day. So when you win a bigger race at Churchill, they take all the connections and they bring them up to the director's room, and they have a champagne toast for the owners and stuff like that. They have Shirley Temples for the kids, and then they have a big bowl of candy. So Annabelle got into the ring pops. So then later on in the afternoon, they were presenting us with the Derby trophies, and she kind of got a little fussy, so I had to trade her my Derby trophy for her ring pop, so she'd take her picture. And then there's some great photos. The Wendy, she's got some great photos of her just looking at her reflection in the trophy, and then all of a sudden she sticks her tongue out to show off her blue tongue in the reflection of the Kentucky Derby trophy.
Anybody with small children can relate to that.
Yeah, it's a great photo. We're gonna have to hang it up in the house, that's for sure.
And then the iconic photo, Brian Hernandez Jr. tossing up the roses, the red roses, which I understand's 554 roses. There's some significance there. Each rose represents renewal of life and endurance, the endurance required to
Yeah.
finish the race.
Yeah, and then on the top bouquet, each there's however many horses are in the race that year, they put that many roses on the top bouquet.
Great stuff. Well, Brian, we didn't talk a lot about Saratoga. What's next? I know this episode will run on Sunday, but I understand, I mean, we're talking here on Thursday. You're racing tomorrow. Tell me what's going on this weekend and maybe the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm up in I came up to Saratoga on Thursday morning to ride a few, and then I have to work some horses the next few days up here, and then I ride here at Saratoga Saturday, Sunday, go back home to Kentucky Sunday night. I ride Ellis Park on Monday, ride a few at Ellis Park on Monday, and then then my wife and I were gonna fly back to Louisiana for a few days. We have to go pick up the kids, so and then we fly to Louisiana for till Wednesday, and then Thursday we come right back up here to Saratoga for the weekend. We're going to be here Thursday through the following Sunday here in Saratoga, and Torpedo Anna will run on the 19th here at Saratoga. So we got a busy couple weeks coming up.
Well, I'm really excited to follow Torpedo Anna. And Brian, after the Kentucky Derby, did you have to set your phone on a counter somewhere? Was it just buzzing like crazy?
Yeah, it was going crazy, and then like there was 2, 3 days after the Derby where we were just doing radio interviews and podcasts and stuff like that. And my wife came to me. She goes, "Look, we need to get away from here for a little while. Let's because we have a home in New Orleans as well." So she goes, "Well, let's go back to New Orleans for a few days, and we'll just kind of chill out there." So we left and we went to New Orleans. Well, then while we were in New Orleans, the governor of Louisiana called, and he wanted to have a special event over at the mansion for us. So while we were down there, and sure, we went and we had a little party over at the governor's mansion with Governor Jeff Landry and his wife, and they presented us with a proclamation from the state. It was a cool moment.
Very exciting, and what a whirlwind! And I'm so happy for you, looking back on your career here, and the work that you've put in, over 2,500 career victories, and what a special place in history, Brian.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. It's been some ups and downs, but it's been fun, to be able to win the Oaks and Derby this year. It's put the cherry on the top, that's for sure.
One last question. This is just another kind of out there question, but what you're wearing for every meet or every race, how is that decided? Are you choosing some of these color schemes, or do you know?
No, with the jockey silks that we wear, each owner that owns the horse, they get to go out and design their own silks and their own patterns. So they design them, and then that's kind of the pageantry of the sport as well, is that when their horse runs, they get to go out there and see their colors out there on the racetrack.
And then, how about just something that you like to do when you've got some dedicated time off, time away? What's some stuff that you do when you're not doing this?
Yeah, well, when I'm not riding, I'll normally take one day a week off and go play golf for a few hours. And then the thing with that too is we own a farm there in Simpsonville, so there's always grass to mow and weed eating and fences to fix. So I stay pretty busy on the farm, and then the kids do a lot of pony clubs and horse shows. So the wife's always bouncing them around all over the place. So we stay pretty busy between the kids and the farm.
I can understand that. You threw out the first pitch, the Louisville Bats game on July 3rd.
Yeah, it was a deal that the organization over at the Louisville Bats called us and asked if we'd be interested in doing it, and it actually worked out to be a great timing because it was my son Benjamin's birthday on the 29th. So we were able to take him to a Bats game and bring him out on the field and let him experience that. So it was a lot of fun. They set us up in a suite there at the Bats stadium, and it was fun to go out and watch a take a little couple hours off and go watch a little baseball.
Great stuff. Brian, as you can tell, I could keep rattling off questions. I just want to keep picking your brain for a while longer, but you've been really generous with your time, and I so appreciate you making some Dan time, which this show, sometimes I talk to people named Dan or with a Dan connection, which you certainly have, and it's just been a real pleasure having you on today.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Folks, thanks for listening today. And if you're looking for something to do that you've just haven't tried, you've been going to ball games, you're taking your kids places, you go fishing, you do various things on the weekend, go to a race. Go look and see what's closest to where you live, and I think you're going to have a good time. And your kids, watch how they react. I think Brian, you'd probably echo that too. Like, this has got to be a fun day if you're 7, 8, 9 years old or any age.
Yeah, and you see the kids out there at the races all the time, and that's another good thing is the jockeys, while they're out there, they're pretty interactive with the kids. You can come up and get an autograph, maybe get a signed pair of goggles, and it's just a fun experience, to watch the kids how much they enjoy the race, and it's a fun time if you can get out to it, that's for sure.
And you'll make some special memories.
And you might be able to make a little money.
That's right. Okay, well, I'm probably forgetting something, but that's okay. Have a wonderful weekend, Brian. And
And you too.
thanks for being here on the show. You guys take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Dan. Yep.